So good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center's Pinwheel Education Series on Healthy Living and Mental Health. The Pinwheel Education Series is a monthly forum that brings together experts and persons with lived experience to talk about mental health and mental wellness. Everything related to the Pinwheel series, including a recording of today's session, can be found at www.keltymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. Now, for those of you that are joining us for the first time, the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We also offer peer support to families and youth, as well as to people of all ages struggling with eating disorders. You can visit our website at keltymentalhealth.ca for more information, resources, and for our contact information. So we have two speakers to start things off. So Christine Koos is a physiotherapist with the Provincial Mental Health Metabolic Program, and Lori Chow is a dietitian with the Provincial Mental Health Metabolic Program at BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services. And for those of you that are unaware, the Metabolic Program provides specialized management for children and youth with mental health and endocrinology / metabolism complications. So welcome, Christine and Lori, and go ahead.
Thank you, Azada, and thanks to the Kelty staff for asking us to speak today. As Azada mentioned, my name is Christine. I'm the physio. I'll talk first, and Lori, the dietitian, will talk second. I was going to say that sometimes I get excited and talk too fast, so you could just yell, slow down, but you're all muted. So you could wave frantically on telehealth if I'm going too fast, and I could try to slow down. Newsflash to everyone, exercise is good for you. I'm going to try to stay away from that message because I think that message everybody knows. But instead I thought today I would try to dive in a little bit deeper and explore what we know about exercise or physical activity and mental health. So specifically, talk a little bit about evidence for the benefits of exercise in certain mental health conditions, and what that exercise needs to look like to have a good benefit from it. So the research and science tells us that there's a really strong relationship between physical activity and mental health. But the relationship is a complex one, and we're not exactly sure how it works yet. Two things we know for sure. Number one, we know that regular physical activity is associated with better mental health and emotional well-being. So what that means is regular exercises report feeling better in general. And the second thing we know about the relationship between physical activity and mental health is that there's an association between mental health and the reduced risk of developing a mental health disorder. So essentially, regular exercisers develop mental health disorders less than non-exercisers. So science has established that there's a relationship, but we're just not exactly sure. It's like a chicken or the egg thing. So does physical inactivity, is it a cause or consequence of poor mental health? So if you have a less active lifestyle, could this cause mental health concerns? Or is it a mental health condition that causes people to become more physically inactive? So that's what we're not sure about. But because people with mental health disorders are less physically active, they're at a higher risk of developing chronic physical conditions in the future. So those are things like heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, and asthma, things that we don't really want. So once again, exercise would be helpful. But in the mental health world, exercise isn't recognized as an independent treatment for mental health disorders, so it certainly doesn't take the place of more traditional treatments like pharmacotherapy or psychological therapy, but rather it's an adjunct treatment. So exercise plays a role in helping people manage stress or managing side effects of some mental health medications and improving overall physical health. And those things in the big picture of health are really helpful. So to get specific, most of our science and research focuses in on three areas of mental health that they found exercise to be helpful for. The first one and the biggest one is exercise as a treatment for depression. And this is the area that we have the most scientific evidence for. And we know that exercise actually reduces symptoms of depression, especially with people in the mild to moderate range of depression. And in fact, some places, the evidence is so good that some places in the world, i.e. the United Kingdom, they recommend a structured group exercise program as the first step in treatment and management of people with mild to moderate depression. So before they would go to a medication, they try an exercise program, which is pretty cool. We also know that exercise is helpful for anxiety. So exercise is found to be moderately effective to decrease anxiety symptoms, including panic disorder. And one study found that 10 weeks of aerobic exercise, I think it was 3 times a week or something not too crazy, was more effective than a placebo pill, so a pretend pill that doesn't work, but less effective than the actual medication. So again, in terms of anxiety, it would be exercise as an adjunct, so an additional treatment in conjunction with the more traditional ones. And then there's also a lot of research on using exercise for schizophrenia. And most of the studies show that exercise can improve some of the symptoms associated with schizophrenia, like flat emotions or decreased drive. But the exercise didn't have an effect on delusions or hallucinations, so it can help with some areas. And generally, throughout the research and the studies, regular exercise can help with social skills or social competencies, improving sense of well-being, and improving self-esteem, which are all really good things. So we know for sure that exercise improves physical health of anybody, including individuals with mental health concerns or disorders. So that, again, that like boring message that exercise is good for you. But this is important if you think of this, and this is kind of an interesting fact. So individuals with serious mental health disorders, so on the like severe side of any disorder, mental health disorder, die 16 to 20 years earlier than the general population. That's a lot if you think about that. And 2/3 of these premature deaths are related to physical health factors. So remember those things we talked about, like heart disease and diabetes, those type of things. So if you think of it in that context, I think there's a really big role to play for talking about increasing or adding physical activity into the lifestyles of people who are dealing with mental health concerns. So it's a good idea to exercise, and really, when you think about it, there are very few contraindications or bad things that can happen if you exercise. It's certainly if you have a heart condition or your doctor has told you not to exercise, then you should listen to that, but most people can, and there aren't any contraindications to it. So now that we've established it's probably a great idea to add some physical activity or exercise, I'm sure everyone's thinking, well, how much, how hard, what does that exercise need to look like? And this is where the research lets us down a little bit. It's very unclear as to if there's a magic number or a magic thing to do to get a good benefit from exercise in the mental health world. But I'll give you kind of like a few things to think about or just a general idea. So there's lack of evidence to support specific exercise parameters. But the idea is that regular exercise, or so long-term exercise, is where it's at. So in order to make this work, in order to make exercise work long-term, you need to consider the individual. So not everyone is going to like jogging. Not everyone is going to like golf. Not everyone's going to like, what's the newest, like CrossFit or some of those more intense things. So you have to figure out what's going to work for the individual, and you need to start at a reasonable dose and increase slowly. So most of the research will say a minimum of 30 minutes a day, 3 times a week for adults. For kids, we recommend a little bit more. We recommend trying to get 60 minutes at 7 days a week. But the idea is to start small and slowly build up. Because if you start too hard and it hurts, we've all been there, right? We tried to keep up with so-and-so, or we went for a jog with our neighbor and nearly coughed out a lung. If it hurts, it's not going to work. So you need to start small and build slowly up within your individual parameters. Slower, this is interesting actually, slower, fast, it doesn't seem to matter. So walking versus running, or walking versus higher aerobic demanding exercises, seem to have the same effect. So essentially just not sitting, just getting your heart rate above a resting rate, has a positive effect. And I'll leave you with the 2 things we know for sure. To make an exercise plan stick, we having a social support. So a friend, a colleague, a relative, a dog, a pet, someone that depends on you for to exercise with or to do the exercise with will help make sure that you do it long term, and making it enjoyable or fun. So if it's not fun, you're not going to do it. But if you find something that works, that you like it, perhaps meeting a friend isn't too expensive, breaking down some of those barriers, you're more likely to continue with it. So if you're thinking about adding some exercise, those are just a few things to think about. I've been very lucky the last 4 weeks. I've had Caitlin Barrett, a UBC physiotherapy student, working with me, and as any good preceptor does, I put her to work and I had her look up a couple of interesting articles to highlight a couple other areas of research in terms of exercise and mental health. So she's just going to summarize two articles that we thought were really cool, and then she'll pass it to Lori. So here is Katie.
Hi everyone. So I found a couple of articles. I found a review article and it looked at 50 different studies. And they were all about exercise and exercise for people with challenging behaviors and intellectual delays. So what they found in these 50 different studies was that exercise such as running, swimming, sports, walking, jogging, and any aerobic activity was associated with a decrease in these challenging behaviors. So challenging behaviors such as aggressive, destructive, self-injurious, or hyperactive behaviors. So that's really cool that they're like in all of these studies that they're seeing the decrease in these challenging behaviors. And they also found that it didn't matter, like Christine was saying, it doesn't matter if it's low or high intensity activities. So it could be lightly walking or it could be running, and you'll still see a decrease in these negative behaviors. So that was really interesting. And they also found that the more often you were exercising, the better the results. So if you maybe take a couple of breaks throughout the day to do something active, like taking a 10-minute break to just go on a walk, then you're going to see better results with decreasing these challenging behaviors. And another article I found was comparing exercise therapy versus an alternate therapy that was not exercise based for patients with schizophrenia, and they found there was a more decrease in the symptoms for the exercise therapy group versus the other group, and so they found decrease in symptoms of schizophrenia and depression with exercise. And the other thing they found was the improved cardiovascular fitness, which Christine also talked about, and so that reduces your risk of other comorbidities. And so, good news.
Great. So on to nutrition and mental health, this is Lori. So I'm going to talk a little bit about general nutrition and mental health, and then a couple of new areas for me anyway into research that looks exciting and promising. And then a little bit about what you can actually do. And like Christine, I'm not going to talk about increasing your fruits and vegetables in Canada's Food Guide. I think people are pretty good on that by now. And so in general, I would say that you can tell in your day-to-day life, and I think everybody can tell in their day-to-day life, that mental health and nutrition are linked in some sort of way. Like if you skip a meal, I know I get really irritable and cranky and miserable. And I can see my kids probably like growing horns out of their heads when I have forgotten to give them a snack in the afternoon, and you wonder what in the world is happening to their behavior. And then it's just they've skipped a snack and everything kind of gets terrible from then on. And so we know that there's the link there between the nutrition and the mental health. It's just a matter of finding it in their more of a research sense, and that seems to be as far as nutrition goes in more baby stages, and it's expanding quite rapidly, but still there isn't really very good hard and fast evidence in almost any of the different mental health disorders. And there's a lot, so there's a lot of different research going on in small bits everywhere. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of new ones that I've looked at recently. And so one article just came out this week actually, which is super exciting. It was in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. and it was around omega-3 supplementation and a reduction in behavior problems in children, and it was children 8 to 16 years old. And the cool thing about this research is there's been research going on for quite a while now on adults and incarceration, and then a reduction in like going back to jail in the future if they've had omega-3 supplementation, which is a pretty easy thing to do to help with reducing aggression and that sort of behavior. And so they finally started looking at this in the pediatric population, and there was pretty good results that in the parental reports of the child aggression and behaviors. But the best, and probably what I found the neatest result from the paper that came out, was that the parents' behaviors and aggression ended up also improving. So they were able to, they did a 6-month omega-3 supplementation trial versus a placebo, and then they followed the kids for a further 6 months. And at the end of that 12-month period, the parents' behavior had improved. And so because the child behavior, you can imagine the stress lowering and the parents being able to react in a more positive manner and being able to continue that even after the supplementation stopped. So it's a pretty neat new area. It's not something I would say like everybody jump out and give omega-3s to everybody, but it's really cool to see it happening and sort of that area being looked into. And another thing that's been around for a little bit longer is diet for depression, and specifically a more of an anti-inflammatory style diet. So kind of like that Mediterranean style, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, the olive oil, like the monounsaturated style of fat, and being really helpful for preventing depression. And so the studies right now have really shown more of a association, and people now are starting to look and see if they can find a causation. So they're putting people on these diets and then seeing if there actually is a reduction in people being diagnosed with depression afterwards. But there's really good, it seems like a really good idea. Like they've shown that the diet can be anti-inflammatory, which can reduce these factors as far as depression goes. So that's another really cool area. And probably one of the more exciting things for us in our program is that the Mediterranean diet also helps with cardiovascular disease, and which is something that we're trying to prevent. And so one diet being good for pretty much anything that you have going on is great. And so those are a couple of studies that were really, or a couple of areas that are really cool right now. And so as far as what diet for everyday sort of life and how to make changes, we all know, I'm sure everybody has tried, like diet is a hard thing to make changes around, and it's hard to find a place to start sometimes and to know what to do. And in our program, we always talk about making SMART goals and starting really slow, like Christine was saying, and making it really achievable and nothing overwhelming. And then you can keep on building on that over time. And I think I was really lucky this week to go to a talk by a pretty amazing dietitian. And she kind of drove home for me again that a really good place to start with everything is finding structure in kids' days. And they do so much better in all aspects of their life with structure generally, but then also with food and making sure that they have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then the snacks in between. And then once you get structure settled and they know that consistently they're going to be getting food and they're going to be fed, that then trying to also work in more of a family style of a meal. And the research around family meals has always been, everybody's been excited, everybody should sit down together as a family. It's really good for mental health and for behavior and future, that sort of thing. But we also can see that family meals, there's been some research showing that a family meal where there's a lot of arguments, a lot of fighting, a lot of people pushing you to eat your fruits and vegetables, that doesn't have positive outcomes, and which makes a lot of sense. And so a family meal with low stress and without food issues at the table, so the number one priority being the structure, and then just getting to the table without worrying about what your child is eating. So sticking the food on the table, and then whatever they eat or whatever they don't eat, leave it up to the child to do that. And so that family meal time can be a more positive experience for everybody, can really be a really great starting place. And this woman was saying that when that happens and when those family meals happen, then the variety and the different style of eating and the new foods end up coming with time on their own. And so you don't have to stress so much about whether or not kids are getting a fully perfect balanced meal every single day. And so that would be where I would recommend starting with families, if you're able to get that going. And then I'm going to leave it at that and not get into all the other nutrition benefits of things.
Okay. Thank you, all three of you. So our next speaker is Micah. She's on the phone calling in from the island. And Micah is a grade 11 student who with mental health issues. And the metabolic team has been helping her through her journey. So Micah, you can go ahead and introduce yourself and then tell us a little bit about your story.
Hi, I'm Micah, and you guys heard the intro, and I suffer with mental health issues, and it's been an ongoing struggle, and so things are getting better. Okay, so what happened was I actually don't have my notes right now, so I'll try to say it the best I can. But what happened was I was sent to the hospital when I was 13, and I stayed there for 4 months, and I was diagnosed with several mental health issues, and I was given meds, and I have tons of support, and I've had tons of support from so many sources, and it's just been great. But things were really hard for a long time, and now I feel like things are getting a little bit better almost every day. Since we are talking about mental wellness and being healthy, I would like to follow up on what Christine and Lori were saying and just give some experience to what they just pointed out. So with exercising, I totally agree. Starting small is the best way to go. When I got out of the hospital, I was told that I was to exercise 30 minutes of walking every single day, and I did it almost every single day. And then over the years since then, I've built it up. I've done some Zumba. I've done stuff like walking a lot instead of just 30 minutes. I've recently done rowing. I want to start golfing. I am into something called JNL Fusion, which combines a bunch of stretching things and a lot of kickboxing moves and stuff, which is quite fun as well. So I went from going from just the moderate stuff, and now I'm getting into the higher levels of exercise, and it's taken quite a while to get to the stage that I'm at, but it's definitely worth the journey of the exercise and all that. And I'm really enjoying exercise, and it's made me feel a lot better. I guess exercising is like with heels, which I just recently discovered. You start off with a baby one or a flat, and then you make your way up. So, yeah, and also, I love exercising with people. I have a friend named, she's a friend of mine, and we go to the gym sometimes, and we just walk for an hour on the treadmill, or the last time we met, we just took this really nice path near our rec center. And it was amazing. And just today and other times as well, my mom and I walked for an hour this morning with our dogs. And normally we walk at this nice place near our house, and it's just so nature-filled, and it's just beautiful. And I think that having fun with exercise and choosing the right ones are really good. And I learned a lesson that included that when you are trying something, just don't judge it too much, and really just try it at first, and then you'll see if you'll like it. But don't give up on it too quickly, because recently I've tried rowing, and the first time I was so scared. I didn't even want to step into the boat from the dock. But the last time I went rowing, I was told that we could try standing up in the boat and putting our arms in the air. And I did it, and it was just really fun. Now I want to continue rowing, and I'm going to look into that. So the best part about exercising for me is really ending it in a really nice way, like having this really pumped up feeling where before you exercised you felt really sad or mad or anxious, but then once you finish the exercise, it feels like you're on top of the world. It's just amazing, and I love feeling that every time I exercise. And the best part is that over the years, I've been building muscle and losing my waist circumference, which is pretty good. Regarding diet, I don't always eat healthy, I'll be honest, but I'm really trying to eat more. Well, I'm doing cooking. I'm doing cooking at school, and we've been making healthy meals. Lori, Christine, you don't know this yet. I have been avoiding sugar. For example, on Victoria Day, after a long time of really eating all these delicacies because of the holiday, I decided to not have the ice cream. I decided to not have the sugar because I knew that I just wouldn't be benefited from it. And so I am still trying to do my best with my diet. And as Lori put it, we shouldn't always completely restrict ourselves from these things. Like having chips once a week is okay, as she said. And that's because I've experienced trying to go on and on and on without having sweets or foods considered as junk foods. But then I learned that, as I think I talked about this with Lori, that when you do that, you end up really crashing, and it's not pretty because if you restrain yourself from all these foods that you love or enjoy, you're going to end up wanting them a lot more after restricting yourself from them. So I have been trying to have just a little bit of sugar, a little bit of more of the unhealthier foods, but I've been really trying new foods that are healthy, and I'm just loving it. And I've started eating. I've started having snacks in between my meals, which has really kept me going, I believe. So it's pretty cool. And I just want to end with something. Exercise and diet has really, really benefited me all these years, and I don't know where I'd be without teams such as the metabolic team and just exercising and watching what I eat. I don't know where I'd be without those things, because it's really made my experience with my mental health issues much easier, and easier to really adapt to them and enjoy life more. So that's all I have to say.
That's great. Thank you so much, Micah, for sharing your experience and telling us about it. That's great. So we have some time now for questions. So I think I'm going to just start with telehealth. Do you have any questions over there in Nanaimo?
Yes, I do.
Looks like a no over there. Okay, so for those of you that are on the phone, you can unmute yourselves and ask any of our speakers a question if you have one. So anyone on the phone. Okay, it doesn't look like there's any questions right now on the phone. We'll come back to you in a second. How about from you guys in the room? Do you have any questions? I had a question. For Lori, what are kind of simple things that you can do to start working on your diet, right? So improving your diet, just like little things, or is there kind of like a, with exercise, it was kind of like get a little bit of activity a day or start small. What is it like with nutrition?
With nutrition, it tends to be a lot more individual from where people are coming from. So, I mean, if a kid's coming in and they're drinking 2 or 3 liters of pop a day, then that's an easy place to start. Mm-hmm. And depending on how strongly attached they are to that pop, I guess it's an easy place to start. And so that we would normally work from there. Mm-hmm. But it can be quite individual. Like somebody might want to work on increasing their fruit and vegetable intake on their own accord, or maybe that's a parent's goal that they want their kid to have more. And then we'll talk about that maybe from more of a perspective of not having it for the health benefits, but finding ones that you actually enjoy eating. Because there's no point in trying to force something down your throat that you're not going to enjoy.
Right.
And so finding things like that that are a little bit more acceptable, or, I mean, I always love whole grains and fruits and vegetables and having like balanced meals with the protein, the carbohydrate, the fat, but that's sort of an end goal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a question actually for Lori. No, I don't have children, but okay. When you were talking about when kids, you sit down at the mm-hmm. at the dinner table or something as a family, and this is just from talking to friends of mine who do have kids, mm-hmm. and there's some of them will make a different meal for their child.
Yeah.
Because they're just worried, well, I would rather do that and have them eat it mm-hmm. than not. So when you said just let them eat what they want and leave what they don't want, mm-hmm. what would you?
So the recommendation is normally that you would have the parent is like there's it's called a division of responsibility in eating, and so the parents are in charge of providing whatever food they think is appropriate. Mm-hmm. With that being said, trying to make sure there's at least one thing on the table that everybody will have, which might just be bread, mm-hmm. bread and butter, right? And then the child's responsibility is to decide whether or not they're going to eat that. Mm-hmm. And then with that sort of division, the child will end up learning to eat the other foods over time. And so if they're made that like, short order cooking style of eating, when that happens, the variety will not, mm-hmm. or it will take a significantly longer time for it to increase. Okay. And so it really allows the kid to explore food at their own pace. Mm-hmm. And it ends up reducing your workload.
Well, yeah.
Which is really helpful. Yeah, and it can make the dinner time a lot more pleasant.
Right.
And the child will know, like, mm-hmm. It'll take about, if somebody makes that switch, for most kids, it would take about 7 days for them to adapt to it, and then they'll just be used to it and know nothing else is coming and move on.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Other questions?
I had a question for Micah. Hi, Micah, it's Christine.
Hi.
Hi. You did so great, hon.
Thanks.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you stay motivated, because ever since I've met you, you've always been doing some form of physical activity, and sometimes it changes, but you're always so good at staying active, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you stay motivated, because that's not easy.
My mom is a great motivator. I remember I'd be on the treadmill a few years ago, and I'd be having a tantrum, but then she'd say, Micah, I think she would say that, oh, Micah, this is good for you, so keep going and just keep going, and I did, and I'm so glad I listened to her. But also, I have a PE course at my school. I'm homeschooled, but there is a PE course, mm-hmm. and we have to exercise, try to exercise 5 of the 7 days of the week, and there's credits, and so we get graded from how much we exercise as well. And also, my school has a bunch of options for physical activity. So, for example, the rowing was from my school. It was organized by the school and a rowing club. And also, just yesterday, I was invited for dodgeball in the gym down the hall at one of the homeschool campuses.
Cool.
So, I mean, there's just a bunch of motivators. And, the best motivation that I've ever found of exercise really helped me recently is from my PE teacher currently. And he said that the start is what stops most people. And I believe he also said that once you begin, you're halfway there. So when I'm about to exercise, I just tell myself, Micah, you know what? Once you do it, you're halfway there, and it's the start that stops most people. So I just try my best to make the start not stop me.
I love that. Thank you, Micah.
That was great. Okay, well, I think that's a wrap. Thank you, Micah, so much for calling in today and taking time out of your schedule to speak with us. Thank you to all of our speakers, and hope everyone has a great day.